Would you please bow your heads with me once more? Eternal God, whose love has planted in us the means to create goodness and to build caring relationships, teach us to use our skills wisely. Help us speak up when injustice rears its head among helpless people. Help us by word and deed to create places where the world's frequent cruelty is beaten into gentleness by our own commitment to love. Help us paint the world around us with colors of joy and gratitude, covering up the graffiti of cynicism and constant complaining. Make us worthy of the gift of another day, one more new beginning in a lifetime of new beginnings. All those blessed chances we are given through your grace to start over. Empty our hearts completely of ill will toward anyone. Fill them with the understanding that beneath the facades of personality that attract or repel us, we are all much the same in our fears and longings, in our need to love and be loved and to be kept thereby from loneliness. Impose on our hearts the image of Christ so we may in every dilemma or decision have a standard by which to judge what we do. And when we fail utterly or find ourselves in places where no one else can follow to save us or comfort us, may our faith in your unconditional love grant us peace. We ask through him in whose name each one of us asks for whatever else is on our hearts in this quiet moment.
My name is Chris Kelly, and standing and singing next to Bob Scott, even I thought I could sing. I'm pleased to welcome you to University Congregational Church. A special welcome to visitors. We ask, if you are a visitor, that you sign the card in the rack in front of you and leave it in the seat, just so we can acknowledge your visit. If there is no card, please take the bulletin and write your name and address on it and leave it in the seat. There is one special announcement. Today is kickoff Sunday for the middle school youth group. Middle schoolers will meet tonight at 6:30 at the Kochner home, 13111 Killenwood. Both parents and youth are encouraged to attend. Hamburgers and hot dogs will be provided, but you need to bring a covered dish of salad, vegetables, or dessert. Please read the bulletin for any other announcements that pertain to you. I thought particularly 1, 4, and 5 were important. Will the ushers please come forward? We come to this beautiful place to receive God's many gifts, and we discover that it is in giving our time, talent, and treasure that we receive. Let us give now, freely and generously. Thank you. Dear God, we have given back only a small token of what you have given us. We ask now that you be with those who decide how these gifts are used so that your love may reach beyond this place and into the community, near and far. Amen.
I should be able to coast for 15 minutes on that excitement. Nice to look up and see John Lottie home from school over the weekend. Cress Wakefield, my granddaughter home from KU also, Elizabeth Myers. Others, I'm sure, in this room, it's always nice to see you before you have to go back again and really dig into work. You can ask almost any minister what one of the most intimidating things in the world is for him, and he would probably tell you that it would be to have the next door neighbor beside whom he had lived for many years appear in church for the first time. I think you all understand why. Special pleasure to me this morning to look out and see Dorothy Minson, good friend of Charles and Gloria Russell, who has decided to come at last and see what it's all about. Welcome, Dorothy. A new calendar year is still 4 months off, but the new church year starts next week with the choir back, as Bob said, The kids really settle in at school. A few yellow leaves starting to fall, and daylight dying sooner. So I always think of this as a transitional Sunday, a good morning for doing a sermon that gathers up some of the odds and the ends of recent events in religion. So, in an autumn potpourri, here we go. I can't help telling you that my son called this morning from Oklahoma City and said, "Dad, what are you preaching on?" And I said, "It's called Autumn Potpourri." He said, "That sounds to me like a suburban gift shop." We love each other. Item number one. There's a new fad in some heretofore rather stuffy Anglican churches in London and York and Brighton. It's called Holy Laughter, a new wrinkle in English worship services. And what happens is that after the usual Bible readings and songs and prayers, the chairs are cleared away and the curate prays for the Holy Spirit to fall on everybody. Within moments, a young woman starts to laugh, and it's not a quiet, subdued giggle, but a body-shaking belly laugh, and very quickly others join in. A young worshiper falls to the floor, hands twitching, and then another, and another, until in 30 minutes, bodies are everywhere as the supplicants cry, shake, roar like lions, and strangest of all, laugh uncontrollably. It has become known as the Laughing Revival or the Toronto Blessing, since it spread from that city in Canada and across to England. Some of it is familiar Pentecostal emotionalism, but the paroxysms of laughter represent the revival of something that died out in the 50s. It has been brought back to life, apparently, first by a Kentucky preacher whose flamboyant services are marked by outbursts of loud laughing. Another American preacher who saw him in action told a Toronto church about it. Holy laughter started happening there in services that sometimes last until 3 in the morning, and it began catching on in other places. Religious historians explain it as a need for emotional release from worries about crime and failing family values and the daily media dose of depressing news. Whatever the cause, it has certainly changed life in Holy Trinity Church in London, where the standing room only crowds of 1,500 start lining up an hour and a half before the service. I saw a picture of the congregation, some on the floor, some laying hands on other people's heads, some shouting with their arms in the air, and one or two in the background looking faintly puzzled and sheepish, but game. The holy laughter in this church is not quite so boisterous, but it's warm and friendly, and I hope to hear a lot of it through the year. In the meantime, it will be interesting to see if the laughing revivals continue to make news in the religious media. Item number two comes up from Texas, where a front page headline in the Denton newspaper reads, 38,000 keep the faith. It refers to a gathering of 38,000 men who call themselves Promise Keepers. and who have met in the North Texas University football stadium from all over the country. So who are the Promise Keepers and what do they plan to accomplish? Well, their goal, it turns out, is to unite men separated by race and church and economics. They make a vow to keep seven promises, among which are moral and sexual purity, strong marriages, loyalty to their churches, unity beyond race and other differences, and the building of a better world. Their budget, I am told, is already at $4 million after beginning in 1990 as a very small group. They are a kind of para-church, doing much of what churches ought to be doing. And next year, they are inviting every minister in the country to gather with them in Denver for a mass unity meeting. They seem to be saying, if the preachers and the churches can't get it done, give us a shot. I think we'll hear more about them. Item number three has to do with the immensely competitive world we live in and how everybody wants to be number one. From the high school athletic teams to the professionals, from businesses to churches, projected movies fall apart when stars quarrel over who gets choice roles and top billing. Baseball owners and baseball players quarrel over preeminence. Pro basketball players seem not quite as interested in just making more money as they are in being sure that they make more money than anyone else who plays the game with them. It's surely worse now than ever, but this is nothing new. There's a great story in Mark's gospel where Jesus is walking along a dusty road in Palestine with his friends, a group I'm guessing who would not have struck most of us as very promising. With a little imagination, you can see Jesus up ahead by himself, head bowed in thought, while behind him the men's voices rise and fall, sometimes angrily, so that when they reach the little town they were headed for and go inside a house, Jesus turns and says, by the way, what were you talking about back there on the road? The thought occurs to me that we all have certain conversations we'd not like someone like him to interrupt. So it's no surprise that on this occasion, all the heads drop, the jaws lock up, nobody wants to speak because they've been quarreling over who is or will be top dog in the new society their teacher is trying to build. As for him, he sits down, calls them around, and says, let me tell you something. Whoever wants to be first in my kingdom must place himself last and be the servant of all the others. That bizarre advice leaves them more tongue-tied than ever. But even from this distance, I think we can read their minds. Oh, sure. Be last to be first. Serve these other guys if I hope to become number one. Tell me more. If those first century men, with no daily ads to stimulate their vanity and greed, fought over preeminence, no wonder being number one becomes an obsession with us. we would be just as silent as Philip and Peter and James and John when Jesus proposes to halt the whole human parade and then put it in reverse with the tail end of it first and the servant at the head and all the pompous kings of commerce and sport and entertainment straggling along at the rear. Can you imagine the consternation if Jesus came to Wichita to pick out our leading citizens? You can bet your life that his list would look a lot different from ours. I get uncomfortable just thinking about it. And apparently the disciples that day were just as eager to change the subject. So after an embarrassed silence, one of them blurted, "By the way, sir, we saw a man the other day driving out demons in your name, and we told him to quit because he doesn't belong to our group." They sat back with happy little smiles and waited for the compliment. But Jesus, it turns out, was not as partisan as we are. He said, "Don't try to stop him, because those who are not against us are for us." In modern language, don't be so narrow-minded, gentlemen. Good is good, and deeds are more important than labels. So welcome help from anyone who is building the kingdom of peace and justice and brotherhood, and quit worrying over the name tags. They didn't get it, I gather. And I've often wondered what went on inside the head of Christ when these grown men, on whom he had pinned his hopes, failed over and over to catch on. He must have been sorely tempted to say, "Come on, guys, grow up. How do I remake the world with minds as narrow and parochial as yours?" But he is kinder than that, and keeps quietly trying to explain the stunning paradox. In my kingdom of character and spirit, the usual rules do not apply. Some derelict sharing his last apple, some wife whose sacrifices have never been noticed, some man giving up a promotion rather than sell out his conscience. These are the unknowns who become heroes in my kingdom. Now, the point of all that is actually timeless. It says, take a wide view of your faith rather than a narrow one. Stay open and eager to learn new things. Old Dr. Samuel Johnson, those of you who have ever had a course in the 18th century in college have probably wondered, as I did, why everybody always refers to him as old Dr. Samuel Johnson. But they always do. And he made a comment once to this effect, that babies don't want to hear about other babies. Little children don't want to hear about other little children. They like to be told, he said, of giants and castles and of something that can stretch and stimulate their minds. I believe that if you go to church and never have your mind stretched, never have an opinion challenged, your church has failed you. Instead of pretending that God is as easy to know as the postman, you ask questions like this: what is God really like? Forget the cliches I've heard all my life. A cosmic Santa Claus? waiting with toys, or a Wizard of Oz who will fix everything if you ask? A tolerant pal who doesn't really care much what you do to yourself? Or a fire one moment when you've trashed your life, and an urgent whisper the next, but always saying, come on, come on, you're not really that dwarfish in spirit. Straighten up. I suppose I have more than one motive for saying such things. I have sermons in mind for this coming church year that I hope will surprise you in some ways and challenge you in others. I spent years of my life hearing sermons that were predictable from start to finish. And I took a vow one day after I had preached for a time that I would try hard, never in the rest of my life, to be totally predictable from a pulpit. If Jesus surprised the daylights out of his friends that day, his church now seldom surprises anybody. It should. Not by fads or bizarre antics or entertainment, but by ideas that shake people up, that cause them to realize there is more going on here than meets the eye. Like what happened to a customs officer at one of the Canadian U.S. crossing points, who looked up one day to see a guy coming on a bicycle with a box full of sand on the rack behind the seat. What do you have in there? The official wanted to know. Nothing, the guy said. Well, let's just check that out. So the customs man raked his hand back and forth through the sand, found nothing, and waved the cyclist on through. But a couple of days later, the same bike rider was back again once more with a box of sand. What do you have in there? Came the question again. Same reply. Nothing. Once again, the sand was searched, even more diligently this time, but there was nothing in it. The fifth time the same guy came through with his same cargo of sand, the official was ready for him. He poured the sand through a screen onto a white sheet. He examined the box very carefully, and still nothing. And so these odd border crossings went on, always with the same result. It was several years later, after the customs officer had retired, that he was in a bar in Buffalo and saw the bike rider come in. He asked if he could buy him a drink. And then he said, you know, I'm retired now, so it makes no difference. But there's something I'm dying to know. I never could figure out what it was or how you were doing it, but I was positive you were smuggling. What was it? A guy looked at him and said, bicycles. I plan to do some smuggling from this pulpit, to cross the borders of pulpit convention frequently this year. And it's good to know that your eyes will be wide open and your minds not easily fooled in this place, where it's not just all right to think, but where all of us consider it to be one of the great commandments. The first challenge comes next week when we take a critical, unconventional look at a certain Old Testament book. Please come back.